Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by the Tough Man Triathlon Series, toughmantri.com, by VeloFix, the world's coolest mobile bike shop, by Polar, chase your destiny, by Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by USA-swimrun.com. If you haven't tried a swim run event, find one on the calendar and give one a try. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we just sent out 2,806 grants totaling $4.3 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville Water on iTunes. And as always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, 2012-2013 Ironman 70.3 World Champion, 2014 Ironman World Champion, and just finished up his personal Grand Slam by winning Challenge Roth, one of the epic events of all time. Mr. Sebastian Keenlane joins us. How you doing, Sebby?
Thanks. Doing good, Bob.
Always a pleasure to connect with you. So you'd been to Challenge Roth a few times before. For our listeners, who they know Ironman World Championship, and they know how amazing that is, talk a little bit about how special Challenge Roth is.
Yeah, so Challenge Roth used to be Ironman Germany when it originally was introduced. And to keep a long story short, I think there were some issues between a couple of people. And so, they decided to basically found the biggest competitor of Ironman nowadays,
right,
when it comes to triathlon at least, and that's a challenge. And I think for me, it's I think after Ironman Hawaii, there are two big races, especially for European, and even more special for a German guy. And that's Ironman Frankfurt and Challenge Roth, yeah. And when I started doing long course racing, and I didn't need to qualify for Kona because I just wanted to do one long course race a year.
Yep.
I did the first two long course races there, and I finished both times. And at that time, for me, that have been amazing races, and I was super, super happy with the outcome at those two first attempts on the long course. The very first long course race in Roth at that time, I broke the eight hour mark as the first rookie ever, and
wow.
I also broke the, I think at that time, 12-year-old bike world best from Jürgen Zech. So for me as a rookie, that was
that's pretty high. That's pretty lofty places.
Big, especially in Germany and at a race with crazy lots of spectators. You need to know Roth is a very small town, so to speak. You can't even compared to Frankfurt, it doesn't have a single hotel.
No. Yeah.
So, even all the pros usually stay at homestays. And, it's really all the people in the town support the race. And you'll definitely feel that. But, I would not, if I have to pick what's better, Roth or Frankfurt, I would not be able to decide. Both races are very special, of course, especially for a German guy. And but it's an amazing race, and super happy to win it this year. Yeah.
What I love about it, there's 24,000 people who live in Roth, and on race day, there's 250,000 people on the roads, and it's just crazy. I remember the first time I came over there, there's this big grass area. I'm like, where does everybody finish? And they go, oh, right there. I'm like, wait, out in the grass area? They said, no, we're building a stadium. we start tomorrow. They build a 10,000 person stadium basically in 4 days. The place is just so unique. There's really a cool feel to it. I don't know if there's another race in the world. Do you, on Thursday night before the race, where the pros are in Lederhosen drinking beer together? Does that happen anywhere else?
Probably after the race.
Yes. Yeah.
But I can't tell you about that.
So, in terms, you've raced Cameron Wirth now a couple times, number of times, and first time a lot of people saw him was last year in Kona. When you and Lionel and Cam came out of the water basically close together and ended up blowing the bike ride apart. Talk a little bit about Cam, because you guys came out of the water leading lead group in Roth, and again, Cam went to the front. That guy can ride the bike.
I didn't realize that he also had a faster transition than
yes.
me.
Yes.
And therefore, immediately took the lead on the bike, and so when I started the ride, I overtook Andy Greiz, fellow German, and said, "Did you realize Cameron also was in the lead group?" And he was like, "Yeah, he's already at the front." And I'm like, "Oh, better hurry now."
Yes.
And so that first 10 minutes of the bike ride have been pretty hard, just like to bridge up to him, because I knew that this will be the absolutely perfect setup for me.
Right.
And, well, I mean, it was just crazy. I just took the lead once in I was riding behind him all day, and I thought, like, at least I show some respect to this guy and just offered my my service at the front, and but I was just at the front for 300 meters, and then he took the lead again and said something like I should save my leg for the run or something like that, and I was I was a little bit shocked.
So this year, when you go back to Kona, you've got Patrick Lange, who's run 2:39 2 years in a row. You've got, you know, two-time champion Jan Frodeno. Javier Gomez is coming over. Obviously, you're a champion there as well. And then you know, Cameron Wirth and Lionel Sanders and potentially Andrew Starkowitz in terms of the bike ride. It seems like every year that field just gets deeper and deeper.
Yeah, it's just listening to you saying all the names is already makes me really motivated to probably just have a half day of rest today instead of a full day of rest. I mean, of course, every day you go there and say it's probably the strongest field ever and stuff like that. But the thing is, I have the feeling it's every year it's actually true. It is always the strongest field ever because
right.
our sport is just still developing. We are still a very young sport, and I think we haven't seen the greatest talent ever doing the sport yet. And I just have to give my hat to the legends from my beginnings of the sport, because when you look at times dated and when you look at how much the equipment has developed and everything, it's quite stunning that it took so long to actually really see some improvements when it comes to times. And Patrick just broke the more than 10-year-old run record 2 years ago. So. But yeah, I definitely think it's a strong. It's just very great for me to be able to race against those guys. And Javi, Jan, those guys, they are absolutely legends, not only why, but just overall in our sport. And I'm really, really forward to this year's race. I would just love to be able to whatever clone myself and above me is actually watching the race and doing the race.
So, yeah, it'd be fun to watch it and do it. And speaking of watching, you were doing the commentating at Ironman Frankfurt, and you got to see Jan in full effect, having one of those days. Do you learn anything from when you watch, when you get sort of a front row seat and get to watch a performance like that?
Oh, yes. I have to say it was really stunning, especially from a mental standpoint, what Jan did. I mean, I have to say every race this year was really a statement from Jan, you know.
Yep.
I mean, in Oceanside,
yeah,
he basically took the strength from Lionel and used it against him. So the last 30K on the bike were really outstanding, and he actually rode away again from him, and then still I've been able to run a quicker time. So that was really not just a win, it was actually really a showcase of his abilities. And then the same in Germany, 70.3 Kreisgau, Jan again racing Patrick Lange and was quick in all three disciplines. And now leading up to the race in Frankfurt, everybody was talking about a potential magic second half of the marathon from Patrick. And I mean, I have to say, when you look at Patrick's run in Hawaii, and everybody knows how hard this run is in Kona, especially after such a tough bike ride and his times, when you are able to run sub 240 marathon in Kona, you should be theoretically able to run probably a 234, 233 in a race like Frankfurt, especially on good conditions. So and with that in mind, Jan didn't freak out when he wasn't able to drop Patrick on the bike. I think he even kind of like was happy with the situation.
Yep.
Because he did exactly the same thing he did in Oceanside with Lionel. He actually took the strength from Patrick and used it against him.
Yep.
He ran a quicker second half of the marathon, which is crazy. Because, I mean, my second half of the marathon is usually always 5-6 minutes slower than the first half, and it's so difficult to do. And he, it was just a statement. And I mean, Jan is definitely going to Kona as the absolutely main favorite, even if Patrick is the
defending champ.
Is the defending champ, and so I would not bet against Jan, but that's Kona, that's our sport, and you know, everything can happen. I mean, you say this so often that everything can happen, but especially watching from the sidelines, I really see it, and that everything can happen for good or for bad. Yeah.
What was interesting is talking to Lionel after Oceanside, and he goes, you know, all I've wanted is to beat Jan. And I've won Oceanside the last couple of years and really felt this was the year. And he goes, you know, he says, Jan is that teacher you had in high school that no matter what you did, it wasn't good enough. I thought I had everything wired, my bike, my run, and the guy killed me. It's like, oh, that's exactly right. Jan this year, I think, is basically coming out and saying, Patrick, you think you're a better runner? Let me show you. Lionel, you think you're a better cyclist?
Yeah.
Let me show you. Which is sort of the mark of a champion, right? You have a formula for winning Kona. This last year, he had back issues, didn't work. And now he's basically saying, okay, don't count me out.
I mean, I think in the last 2 or 3 years, you know, Jan raced for the history books. But now I see Jan again racing just for himself. You know,
yep.
I know Jan very well, and if he has this chip on his shoulder and just want to prove everybody, himself and especially his opponents, what he is capable, he's a deadly weapon, yeah.
Now, knowing Patrick a little bit, do you think that affects him or when he gets outrun by Jan? Or is it one of those things where, hey, I'm getting ready for Kona. Frankfurt's great. I need it to validate, need it to do one. But I'm pushing all my chips into the center in Kona.
Ooh, that's really difficult to say. I think I don't know Patrick well enough to really say something about that. But I have to say, if this is not affecting you, then you have nerves of steel, and I think you don't have that at this time of his career. You know, it's also for him, it's a little bit of a black spot when it comes to his Kona victory, that he basically, I mean, he beat Jan, but he didn't beat him, you know. I mean, Jan had problems, and everybody can have problems, and that's just not bad luck or something like that. It's a lot of things come to that, and probably he suffered too much on the bike. But at the end, you know, it wasn't like that. They were on a foot race towards the finish line, and Patrick really beat him in the race. So, I mean, you want to beat the other guy when he's at his very best, and
absolutely,
not when he has a flat tire or something like that, you know.
Right.
So therefore, I think he has doubts, no question. And, you know, often you ask yourself, what would have been if I would have not had the flat tire or whatever? But you also ask the question, what would have been if the other guy didn't have these back issues or something like that? And I think that's a question Patrick asked himself a couple of times, and now he has probably even bigger question marks after this race in Frankfurt. But on the other hand, Patrick is really an athlete that's built for the race in Kona, you know. I mean, if everybody would have started with a time trial start in that race, I would say Patrick would have been very difficult for him to win the race. But he's just so suited for the dynamics of this race. And, when you look at his running, I mean, I think there's nobody else right now who is able to run that good in Kona in the second half. And I don't, not even Harvey or Curry or any of those guys, I don't see them match his running abilities, especially on the last, like, 15Ks in Kona. But, yeah, this year's race will be another race than the last 10 races and so on. So, therefore, it will be a whole different dynamic, especially with so many strong cyclists in the field now. And also, potentially, Lionel maybe making the main front pack, hopefully, of course, me too. And then it's going to be a different race.
Yeah, if you and Cam and Lionel all come out of the water in that lead group, that would be pretty fun.
Yeah, I mean, the race in Kona is really difficult, especially on the first probably 60K, even for a strong rider just like to get away. I made that experience in 2015 when I did make the front pack and rode to Jan after maybe 50K into the bike ride.
Yeah.
But at the end, ended up eighth place. I mean, everybody told me, if I make the front pack, you're going to be unbeatable in this race. And then this was the only year I made the front pack, and I had my worst Kona result ever. So it's very, of course, it's just a different ride if you can't just do your own pace, but you actually have to think about a tactic, how to break away from the group. But, you know it probably the best, Bobbit. In Kona, especially the conditions, they can be so different. If the race would have been 3 days later last year, the conditions would have been completely different with very strong winds.
And, yep.
So therefore, I wish I can say I win the race in every conditions, but right now I really think I would, when the conditions are super calm, I'm definitely not the main favorite in this race. But if the conditions are really tough on the bike and I'll make the front pack together with a couple of other strong guys, then I'll definitely have a pretty good chance.
So talk a little bit about Lionel, because you guys have had some great races and Sommerin with that 20-meter draft rule, and the two of you guys have hammered against each other a number of times. What, you've watched him, and actually Lionel told me once, he goes, one year he was doing, I think he did 15 training days where he rode 100 miles and got off and ran a half marathon. And right, he did all that. And then he blew to the moon in Kona. The next time he was training for 70.3 and he was great for 4 hours and then blew to the moon. And he said, you know, Sebi said, you know, maybe you should do something in the middle. Maybe you should train a little, not quite as long and not quite as short, something in the middle. And then he finally had a breakthrough. Talk a little bit about what you see in Lionel, and obviously you enjoy racing him.
Probably I just should have.
You should have told him anything. You should have told him anything.
I think I actually just told him to read his own blogs. He wrote in both years after Kona, or I think probably leading up to Kona, because he's like super analytic, very self-reflected.
Yes.
And due to that, he can also be super, super entertaining. I mean, sometimes yep. when you see him, you really don't think that this guy has a really good sense of humor, but
he's hilarious.
Yeah, he's super funny, and so I think that together with his work ethic, with his ability to suffer at that level, he does. I think he said that he realized, I think 3 years ago when he raced Kona, that he would be able to kill himself with sport, like with this race. So he wasn't doing very good, but he realized that he can just suffer a lot. And I mean, that's one of the important things in our sport, to be willing to suffer. And that together with his ability of self-reflection and humor, it's really, really good and really helpful, I think, in our sport. But yeah, I raced a lot of times against him, and I mean, you know, there are people that race for victory, and then there are people, whatever, they race for to prove other people something, or they just race for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And Lionel is just, sometimes I have the feeling he's just racing to hurt himself.
Right.
You know, the thing is, he's leading the race with maybe 3-4 minutes, for example, in St. George this year when I come second behind him. And he's just sprinting the last 200, 300 meters down the finish line shoot. And, you know, he's just going all out without any reason other than to really make himself suffer.
Right. The race is in the bag. He's got the race.
Yeah, that's definitely something scary to see, because, you know, when you race against somebody like him, it's just very, very difficult to beat somebody like him. And a lot of tactics I learned in more than 20 years in the sport just don't work with him. You can't break him mentally, you know. I mean, in a race like Sommerin, when every everything went right for me. I gapped him in the swim. I had in the first time for maybe 4 or 5 years, I came off the bike in front of him. And I thought, this is the chance. But he's not giving up, you know. He's just emptying the tank completely without not looking, calculating if he has a chance to catch me or not. You know, a lot of people, they just give up at one point because they think they can't do it anymore.
Right.
Lionel is not thinking in these dimensions, you know. He's just, every stride is maximum, you know. Every minute of the race, he's trying to squeeze out the maximum. And but that's also very dangerous, you know. I mean, at one point, you can't learn to suffer, you know. I think it's really, at one point, you're not willing to suffer like this anymore. And also, when it comes to a lot of other things like injuries and stuff like that, it can be very dangerous. But right now, I mean, I'm not following him on any social media. Neither I follow Jan, because that just makes me nervous. But every now and then, it's you can't avoid the picture or something like that, and he looks just very, very fit. I think he lost some weight compared to last year. He's like working on all the details, and that makes him definitely one of the top contenders for Kona this year. Yeah.
So you brought up a really interesting point, because I've seen it from covering not just triathlon but marathons over the years. You know, you'd go to the start of a marathon, and there's a guy at the start, a Rob DiCostello, one of the legends, and he'd run probably 20 marathons at that point. And you could sort of see it in his eyes that he knows what's in front of him, and he doesn't really want to be there. You know, sometimes early in a career, you're doing an Ironman or you're doing a marathon, and you don't really know how painful it's going to be later. But when you've done a lot of them, there's a certain point where your body goes, no mas, I can't do it anymore. It seems like you're doing a great job now of sort of picking your spots, not racing that much, and knowing what days, okay, I've got second place, I'm not going to kill myself to make up a minute when the guy's got a 5-minute lead on me. Is there a certain point where you sort of learn how to moderate so you don't go over that edge?
it's really funny you bring that up, Bob, because in Ross, Belinda Granger, and for those who don't know, Belinda is a legend in the sport.
Yep, the queen of Ross.
And she knows me from the very beginning of my triathlon career. She saw me. She was racing in Ross herself when I raced the first time there. And she actually said, like, that was the first time I saw you racing with the brain on. And I mean, in the first second I heard this, I thought, like, oh, I'm one step closer to retire, probably, because for me that always has been almost an insult. If somebody told me race smart, is like, what? I'm not doing a race smart. I want to, like, leave it all out there, and I want to cross the finish line and collapse and feel shit for hopefully weeks. If I'm not achieving that, I'm not happy with myself. And I'm not there yet. I'm not a smart racer, but I'm able to find the balance between both things, the devil and the angel, so to speak, on my shoulders. I'm still able to do something really stupid in a race and blow myself up, but at the same time I have the experience, and I know my body very well, and I know what I can do to my body and when I want to do it to my body. and when I don't want to do it to my body. And that's really one of the biggest things is, you know, when you're in the sport for that long, you start to have a little bit of a nickel here and there and some injury problems and so on. And I realized it's better to maintain a good workload over a longer period of time than to absolutely kill yourself in every training session and then be injured for months, and you have to do rehab for months, and then you go back and you want to make up all the so to say lost time, and then you kill yourself again. That's also one way of training when it comes to the phases of training and relaxation. But I rather do a break before I'm actually getting injured or break myself. And I think in Kona, that's really the day where I want to prove myself that those two lines are actually crossing each other, the line of being an aggressive racer and willing to let it out and absolutely push yourself to the limit, but at the same time still be able to make smart decisions. And for example, when I let Cameron on the bike go, I think in 10 years ago, I would have not been able to make that decision.
Right.
I would have just stayed with him at all costs, but the cost probably would have been to to just see the half marathon mark and not make it to the finish line. it's both things. You need both things. I hope I'll have both.
Well, it's interesting because I think it's important to sort of call your shots, because I don't think you can go to the well. You know, it's not like you've been doing the sport for a year. You've been doing the sport a long time. So you sort of have to pick your shots on Kona is my A race, and that's where I'm going to bury myself. And you can do it, maybe twice a year? But you can't do that all the time, I don't think, and have the type of career you've had. You say that, you know, you didn't think of yourself as a smart racer, but nobody gets to this point in their career like the length you've had without racing and training smart.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's really a very interesting question. If this is just an excuse you start to make over the time, or is it this true? Because that's also we talked about Jan's race plan for this year.
Yep.
And then you look at his race plan last year. And last year, he did a very few races. He only did super easy races where he never had to face real competition.
No,
you know?
Competition,
I
right.
mean, he did. Yeah, he raced in absolutely nobody races.
No,
you know?
Pressure.
I mean, he won all of them.
Yep.
But it wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't the races he usually does. And I think then it was almost some sort of a shock to the system when you hear the gun go off in Kona, and then it's that much more intense. And mm-hmm. I think it's really it's really hard balance to at one point do what you said, you know, not to kill yourself in every race, but at the same time don't lower the bar every race and make every race easier and easier and easier. And at the end, you're going to toe the line and you actually have the feeling it should be easy, but you forgot that it's actually quite hard. And so therefore, it's all about balance in our sport. And I think it's a very important balance. I think I see athletes that kill themselves in races that are not that important for them,
yep.
And that then they don't have the steam, the power, especially the mental power to perform at their very best in October, and especially when you do a European season. Often Hawaii is your last race of the year, and if you raced hard the whole year, you're probably not willing anymore to really push yourself to the max. And So at one point you want to be fresh there. At the other, on the other hand, you don't, you know, want to race easy more or less all year round, and don't have this feeling of you actually need to hurt yourself and want to hurt yourself in the race.
Yeah, it's when I look at what you did this year, you started out with Cape Epic. I mean, you go to something like Cape Epic, which is just a totally different experience. But it also seems like your this year was, hey, I'm already validated for Kona. Have some do things maybe that I haven't done in a while or done ever. Something like a Cape Epic is obviously brutal. It's a lot of serious climbing and single track and everything else. But at the same time, there really isn't pressure on Sebastian Kienle to go win that race.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that was also part of the reason why Ben and I did it. We both had this race in our mind as something we want to do when we are not having to use our body to earn money anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
But then, yeah, we got this wonderful invitation from the Ironman Foundation. And, yeah, we thought, yeah, this is a coincidence. We can't say no. And I mean, beside a lot of bad luck we had, especially Ben, with hurting his back pretty bad, in a very minor crash. But other than that, it was the first time for a very long period that I've been on a start line, and I had no expectations towards myself. I didn't know what to expect. Nobody else knew what to expect or how we can do. And yeah, it was definitely a great adventure. And I think especially being in the sport for a longer time, you have to do things like that to keep your love for the sport, because if it turns into a real job, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, only very few people can say they always give 101% in their daily jobs. And in our sport, it's, you know, if you just give 99%, it's not enough. It's just not enough. You have no chance at all. 1% less, you are done. You know how tough this business is. Payment for the first guy versus payment for the fifth guy.
Yeah.
It's not just 500% difference, but that just makes 1% difference in performance probably. So therefore, you need to stay in love with the sport and what you do, and just keep the flame burning and the passion. And so therefore, yeah, we decided to do something like that, just to see something else, and to race like I used to race when I was a kid, you know, when I wasn't like calculating before the start what I had to do to win or whatever, just like break the routine. And I think that definitely was a success, yeah.
So now that you're, 34? I think it's 34, something like that.
Yeah.
And just turned, right, in July. What is left for you as a professional athlete? What's left to accomplish?
Oh, I think a lot. I think there are so many things to still accomplish out there, and of course, the most important of them is another Kona title. That's for sure. Yeah. So that's what I'm focusing on totally right now. And yeah, and then there's definitely another thing. A third title over the 70.3 World Championships would be great. Next year, I'm not going to do 70.3 World Championships this year.
It's too far. Too much travel.
But, yeah, I like I said, I really want to focus on Kona. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to change everything, but we want to change a couple of things, and one of them is definitely not to do 70.3 World Championships this year. It always worked out pretty well for me, but just like you said, in the last years, it was always really convenient for me, especially traveling-wise, because it was either in North America or in Australia, which is basically halfway to Kona for me. So that was, just easy to do for me. This year, would be like really difficult with traveling to South Africa and then to America. And then it's also, I have two second places at 70.3 World Championships, two titles, and I'm not going to race there for another seventh or eighth place, you know. And therefore, I want to prepare myself absolutely perfect, and that's definitely going to be very difficult together with preparing yourself 100% for Kona. It always has been beneficial for me, I think, to be in that sort of speed and shape for 70.3 World Champs. But, you know, the dynamic also just has changed. And
right.
Especially in a course that's relatively flat. I mean, we have already seen it last year in Chattanooga.
Yeah.
That I haven't been able to break the group on the bike. And then when you are in a foot race against Harvey, that needs definitely a little bit of a different preparation than what I think is ideal for Kona. But next year, 70.3 World Champs are in Nice.
Yeah.
And so a very tough bike course. I think that's what we're all expecting. And I'm going to make another attempt there.
Very cool.
I'm pretty sure.
So what type of conditions do we need in Kona for you to get that second win?
like I said, I would not. It's just for me. It's all already a sign of weakness when you say like you need certain conditions. But I'm always having a very high goal, but also a very very realistic goal.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say, I'm definitely not the main favorite going into this race. And for sure, for me, it would be good to have very windy conditions.
Mm-hmm.
So that really the cream rises to the top on the bike, and that guys that are able to stay in a pack but not be able to ride on their own and do the work in front on the bike, so that they have to suffer. That's definitely the conditions that would favor me. But of course, I'm working hard every day to be in a shape that I don't need any specific conditions to win the race, and just win it in every conditions and in every circumstances. But of course, that's a very, very difficult thing. But I think I know what I have to do, yeah.
Do you still love it? The training, the racing, the traveling?
I think I even love it more from year to year, you know.
Yeah.
I think after 2014, when I reached basically my ultimate goal with winning Kona, I realized that I'm not, you know, ended my journey or reached a destination or something like that. I realized even more that I just love the sport itself, and that I'm not just working for one specific goal or to win one race, but that I just enjoy the work itself and the sport itself and the lifestyle and the people in our sport, all the other professionals, that it's just really the thing I want to do. But I have to say, it definitely took some time after Kona to realize that. I would not say that I fell into some sort of a black hole or something like that and didn't see any sense of my life anymore or something like that. But it was definitely difficult at the beginning to, start winning. Training in the winter again. I was like, I don't know. At the beginning, it was not the same, you know.
Sure.
I was missing something. But after a longer break than usual, I realized that it's not over for me or something like that, that I really love what I do. And I think that's the reason why I'm still improving. I love the work itself and the journey towards my very personal top performance.
I love it. It's interesting. I was interviewing Mark Allen the other day, and he was always one of the guys. As soon as Iron Man was over, he didn't do anything associated with the sport. You know, he'd surf and do different stuff, and really until January. And he says, you know, I think a lot of these guys come back, they get into November and December, and they start basically getting back to training. And you just need to refresh. You just really need to take some serious time off. And that's, you know, probably what you needed.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even now, it's you know, I think when I've done my training, I like to keep my mind busy, you know, and not always think about the sport and what I could do to perform better. Because I think Paula Newby-Fraser once said that if the sport covers more than 50% of your life, it's actually eating you up. And I think for me, it's definitely covering more than 50% of my life. But yeah, I surround myself with people I know that they keep me balanced and not just defining me with results in the sport. Or yeah, I'm able to think about other things than the sport. And yeah, so I think that's really important. Definitely, I mean, at the end, it's always the head that decides in the Kona race. And sometimes your body doesn't need that much recovery, you know. I mean, after long course race, especially this year, for example, after Ross, I think 5, 6, 7 days after the race, I was really feeling fresh again from my body. But I knew from the past that should not start too early again, and just trying to also give my mind a break. And that's way more difficult to realize how much break you need for your head and for your mental state to be fresh enough for Kona.
Hey, Sebi, thank you so much for taking so much time. It's always such a pleasure to get to chat with you. I love your perspective on the sport, and you're just such a first-class representative of the sport. Every time I see you at a race, it's like you're genuinely happy to meet people, and that brings new people into the sport. It's really, really special to see. Thank you for that.
Thanks, Bob. Hearing that from my role model, I hear you have the Challenge Athletes Foundation. Today,
big day
with a lot of people giving away a lot of money to those who haven't been as fortunate as we are, and that's just absolutely great to see. And people like you probably set the tone for a younger generation of athletes like us, and I hope I could also pass that on to the next generation to come.
Well, you will, and the cool part is that we're in a little sport with a big heart. It's a sport that changes lives for the better every single day, and sometimes we don't quite understand the power of our sport, and it's really amazing just to see everything that's happening out there. Sebastian Kienle has been our guest. Again, this is Babbittville. My name is Bob Babbitt. We are brought to you by Tough Man Triathlon Series, by VeloFix.com, by Polar, Chase Your Destiny, by Premium Plus Sports, official travel partner of the Tough Man Triathlon Series, by USA-Swimrun.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We have now raised over $100 million and sent out over 23,000 grants to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. Check us out on Babbittville and iTunes. And until next time, remember, endurance lives here.